If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Right now we're going to go to the phones. We've got a treat today. We have Mike McNair. He's going to be the plenary speaker for MetroCon going on October 26th. You can find out more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. Mike is with Bell Helicopter, and he's in the innovation lead for autonomy vehicles at Bell. welcome to the program, Mike.
Great. Well, thank you very much, sir. It's a privilege to be a part of this.
And I am real interested in the things that you're going to talk about. I'm told that you are interested in the infusion of air and ground-based vehicles into our daily lives, that is to say, flying cars. And I understand the recent announcement by Uber and Bell Helicopter and Hillwood Development about Uber Elevate program, and that it's going to be the first cities to get it is going to be the Dallas-Fort Worth area and Dubai. Can you elaborate on this a little bit?
Certainly. It is a very, very exciting time when it comes to autonomous transport of people. It's clearly an emerging set of technologies, but the idea is not new. So the challenge, if you will, that has been sponsored out of the Uber Elevate activity is to, by 2020, have a testing capability of an air taxi kind of service running between Dallas and Frisco, and then also have that same kind of testing capability available at the Dubai Expo in 2020.
Wow. Now, you say it's not new, and of course we dreamed of flying cars, I mean, forever, back, what, in the 30s or 40s, helicopter platforms were being put on some houses someplace with the anticipation that eventually we'll all have a helicopter. Of course, that didn't materialize, and then we had the Jetsons flying around, and one thing or another, but this seems to be materializing. There's going to actually be flying vehicles, and they're going to be in service, and you think by 2020?
That is the challenge right now. That is a date that Uber has put forward as a part of their Elevate program.
This opens up so many questions. I mean, so the only way then that we would be able to get on this one of these flying cars is if we called up a Uber driver, I suppose, and because we can't own one. The idea isn't that people are going to own one personally, is that right?
Well, it really depends on a number of factors. But from a technology viewpoint, there's nothing to prevent an individual from owning a personal air vehicle, or Uber contracting with someone who has a collection of air vehicles, and Uber helps to schedule the transportation aspect.
Well, I could just there's so many questions. How do you police speeders? How do you stay in corridors so there isn't a lot of accidents in the sky? I mean, we have an accident now. We pull over to the side of the road, but still sometimes they're fatal and involve multiple car pileups. I could imagine some cars flying over me and running into each other and having a fender bender and then toppling to the ground and landing on top of traffic. How in the devil is all this going to be policed?
An excellent question, and right now no one has a good solid answer. The regulation authorities, for instance the FAA, they are actively working this. A tremendous amount of activity is occurring in Europe with the same kind of topic. So the interest is there. Regulators are in the process now of soliciting comments and input and trying to understand the models that are needed to make this happen in a very safe way.
So we have the technology, Bell Helicopter, and of course things are becoming more efficient all the time with what we see with drones now. We had them in the military, and now we have them personally, and so we even have drones now that I understand are powerful enough to lift a human being, and so a flying car vertical takeoff and landing, VTOL, I guess, is the initials for it, the acronym for it. So we've got the technology, but we haven't figured out how we're going to regulate it. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. And what you're bringing up are a couple of very challenging points. One of them is regulation. The other has to do with the platform itself. And then there's technology challenges with the infrastructure. And all those come into play.
It just is mind-boggling. And it just, can you give us a tip on what are some of the solutions? Are you going to talk about that when you do your plenary talk at Metricon?
I will touch on some of those. Of course, a number of those technologies are still emerging and still somewhat close hold, to be frank. It's a highly competitive area, and so it'll be interesting to see how this evolves over time.
Can you give us a peek? I mean, you're going to be the plenary speaker, so tell us, you know, what you're going to touch on.
Okay. Well, for instance, one of the key concerns, obviously, is going to be safety. Another concern has to do with noise abatement. There's a tremendous amount of interest in using electric-powered UAVs for this purpose as a means of cutting down the amount of ambient noise in a neighborhood or in a downtown area. So looking at electric technologies is going to be very, very key to running a successful program.
Drones right now are using battery power, I believe, exclusively, right? There's not internal combustion drones, are there? Isn't they all battery power?
The vast majority of the small UAVs are indeed electric power. There are some larger ones that have reciprocating engines on them, like gas-powered engines. But that gets into a higher size and weight class, if you will. Once you get up into something that's large enough to transport, let's say, 2 to 4 people, now you're looking at some technology challenges when it comes to just an electric solution. You're looking at the weight of the batteries, you're looking at what the battery's lifetime will be, discharge rates, and so on, and making sure that it can deliver enough power for the duration of the flight.
Well, yeah. I mean, really, the batteries are heavy, and the advancement in batteries have been slow. I guess they're speeding up now. We're getting more and better batteries just all the time. But yeah, you get a lot of weight there with the battery, and then all of a sudden the battery, goes dead, and this thing falls out of the sky, and then how do you keep them in corridors instead of running nilly willy all over hell in half of Georgia? I can't envision this.
Right. Well, you bring up two things. One, if a UAV runs low or runs out of power while it's in the air, what happens? NASA actually has a program in place where they are looking at that. They're looking at finding emergency landing spots and always being able to scan the ground while you fly, looking for open areas just in that kind of event. So that's exciting. It's in terms of corridors, well, the FAA, with its current commercial flights with fixed wing aircraft, passenger aircraft, of course there are air corridors that exist already, but what we're talking about with something like an air taxi are air corridors that are much closer to the ground. And that is a plan and a push that still needs to be moved forward in order to make that happen. In terms of technology, we already have the ability to follow waypoints and follow prescribed paths from point to point. So we have the beginnings of the technology solution, but we need that overarching regulatory framework to actually implement it.
Yeah, and then there's weather. I mean, you know, we're driving along the road, things a nice sunny day, got the top down, enjoying ourselves and having a real good time, and all of a sudden a squall blows in, we got to put the top up in a hurry, and if we're not careful, a serious squall blows some traffic, off the road. and we've got updrafts and downdrafts and all those sorts of things. I guess Bell Helicopter has a lot of experience with this since they've been building helicopters for a long time. But with these cars, that's going to be another serious challenge. The weather.
You are exactly right. Aircraft, of course, are particularly susceptible to weather effects. Air drafts, even wind direction and wind gusts are very important. Almost all air vehicles, as you know, take off facing into the wind. That's the preferred direction. So, whereas with cars, you're not limited to that. So there needs to be spacing around a vertiport or a heliport that allows takeoff in a couple of different directions depending on current wind conditions. It may be that there are icing concerns. You don't want to take off if you're too heavy. It always boils down to safety. It may be that in some weather conditions you just cannot run an air taxi. Just like you go to DFW and there are times when aircraft are grounded because of weather conditions.
Well, help me envision this vehicle you're talking about. Will it be driving down the highway and you're kind of nervous and you're stuck in traffic and you need to get where you need to go in a hurry, maybe to the hospital for delivery of a baby or for any number of reasons why you don't want to be stuck in traffic, and you're driving down the highway and you say, well, gee whiz, let's do this. Let's just jump over all these cars, and all of a sudden you vertical take off and speed down the corridor. Is that what we're going to see?
I think one day we just might see a hybrid vehicle like that, something that has tires and blades or wings, and where you can make that kind of decision maybe on the fly, or at least it appears that way. Right now, the focus is on something a little more structured and maybe a little more limited, some might say, which is mainly just the air vehicle itself. So there, it only flies from certain vertiports, as they're called, from one vertiport to another vertiport. So it's not a vehicle that could also run on a roadway.
Well, we've had that for years. I mean, Bell Helicopter has been making helicopters for a long time, and that's what that is. You fly from one point to another point, and you are controlled. The TV stations all have their helicopters. There's medic evacuation and things with helicopters. There's all sorts of things using helicopters, and that's and that they're used for transport now. You know, so why is this going to be any different?
The key difference is the level of autonomy. So right now, such helicopters, they have a pilot. They have a highly trained, licensed pilot who's controlling that vehicle. What we're looking at is not having a pilot on board. So now you just have passengers on board. So now it's the platform that's making some amount of decisions on where to go and how to get there. And so that's being done autonomously. It's being done with algorithms and with sensing instead of with a human pilot.
And this is going to just be another step up from driverless cars, you're saying. So the same technology that we would be using for driverless cars would be able to be embedded in these vertical takeoff and landing vehicles?
You're exactly right. There is a tremendous amount of technology crossover. When we, because the ground case with driverless cars has advanced so well over the last few years, on the air traffic side, air vehicle side, we're able to leverage some of those technologies, those sensors, and those systems, and adapt them for use on air vehicles.
The people that I've interviewed in this program concerning driverless cars are impressing upon me the safety that is with it. There's a driverless shuttle being introduced the end of August in Arlington. But the whole rationale is that the distance between two vehicles, the drivers don't make the decisions any longer to tailgate or to speed up and cut in and out, but that the vehicles talk to each other and are able to be safe. And so your suggestion is then that these vertical takeoff and landing cars will have the safety built in, and so the drivers can't speed or be reckless or anything else because the vehicle itself is controlled.
And that's correct. You know, the vehicle can only go as fast as someone commands it to go. So if the opportunity, if the commanding option is not available to the passengers to exceed a speed limit, an air speed limit, well, then they're not going to. It's limited by that system. And by system, I'm referring not just to the platform itself, but I'm referring to the surrounding infrastructure as well. It's a cooperative balance between the two.
Well, I have to admit, Mike, it's a bit scary. I mean, we heard, we see reports all the time. This 23-year-old woman in Canada who is so involved with her GPS that she's following all the instructions and drives down a boat ramp and into Georgian Bay, because the GPS was giving her wrong instructions and that sort of thing. What is the fail-safe with all this? How are we going to be safe for these things?
Right. Well, certainly I can't understate the role of safety in all this. It has to be there. We are, in the air world, it's not unusual to have redundant systems. It's not unusual to have even voting systems. So, for instance, a GPS receiver might suggest one kind of path, but another sensor, like an inertial navigation system or ADS-B, this being stood up by the FAA, may recommend a different set of paths depending on what the current traffic is like. So we're looking at really a melding and an integration and fusion of these different options in order to plot a course, in order to get people from one place to another.
Well, it leads me to inquire about, the airline industry. We know that the flights are pre-programmed, and we know that, the pilots really don't have a whole lot of work to do unless something serious happens, like what happened with Sully there in the Hudson River when he had to land in the Hudson because the intakes took on birds. But is everything going to be autonomous? No more pilots? I mean, is this going to expand all the way to our jetliners and everything else?
That's a good question. That's probably a good question for the future, as I'll say. But the technology is there to certainly progress in that direction. And the push is on to help the technology move that way.
Well, I have a son and two grandkids that work for IBM, and they tell me that everything is going to have its own IP address pretty soon. That's what it's going to be. But we still haven't been able to solve the cybersecurity dilemma, and I'm just wondering can there be any degree of safety with these autonomous things until we've solved the hacking problem?
Right. Well, cybersecurity is one of the key supporting technologies when it comes to air transportation. Safety is not just redundant systems. It's not just making sure you have enough battery charge. Safety is also making sure that the integrity of the system as a whole is being preserved. And so as a part of that, that's where cybersecurity comes into play. We've heard news reports about drones, small UAVs being hacked. We certainly don't want that with air taxis. We certainly don't want that kind of condition to occur where anyone could be hurt. So it's receiving a tremendous amount of attention. There are standards that are being developed to help facilitate that, and a number of research areas that are looking into managing a secure system.
And then when that secure system fails, who then gets the blame? Certainly, you're all going to have to coordinate this with the insurance industry to figure out how they're going to cover all this stuff and how this is all going to be paid for when the systems fail, because systems do fail. We know they fail.
And they do fail. And so our job is to minimize that as much as possible. You mentioned liability and insurance. That is a key part of the equation. And it's even that is evolving to represent the changes in technology.
Are you going to cover all these things when you do your plenary talk at Metricon? Are you going to get into some of this stuff? Because I could imagine the same questions from the audience are going to be the questions I'm asking you right now.
And they are, first of all, they're very good questions. They're the right questions to be asking. Second of all, they are very common, so I fully expect to encounter them at Metricon. And third, yes, I will be covering some of these as a part of the session.
It's pretty exciting, Mike, I have to admit. It's a brave new world out there. We see this all the time, and it's coming at us, you know, at 110 miles per hour. And solving these problems, I'm wondering how that's going to happen. We have solved some of the problems. As you say, air corridors, you know, airplanes flying east and west fly at a certain altitude, and north and south fly at a different altitude, and all sorts of different things. And air traffic with the airliners has got to be pretty safe. And yet, we had an airliner program to fly from, I think it was Indonesia or Malaysia somewhere, into Beijing, and in mid-flight it does a right-hand turn and ends up someplace in the Indian Ocean, and we still haven't figured out exactly how that happened. And then, of course, we had pain a few years ago where they lost oxygen in the cockpit, the golfer, and the plane just went on and on and on and on and on, finally landed in Canada someplace. Everybody was dead on board. Are we learning any lessons from these things?
All the time. In fact, all those lessons lead into the safety solution. We want to learn what causes those failures. We want to understand them so that we can mitigate them in any future aircraft.
Okay, so this, you believe sincerely, this is where we're going. You think that these problems that I've been throwing at you, one right after another, are actually going to be overcome, and we're going to be able to have vertical takeoff and landing vehicles. Some of them could be our personal vehicles, and somehow or other they're going to safely be guided through some GPS or other, and through the internet, and we're going to overcome all these things, beginning with cybersecurity. Is that the upshot of this?
Yes, that is definitely the challenge, and that is the goal. I'm sure that we will see ourselves step our way to that objective, and it'll be exciting to see those steps unfold. But the objective and the goal is indeed to be able to safely transport people on autonomous vehicles by air.
Okay, all right. So what have we missed? What haven't I asked you? What is a takeaway? What do you want to leave your audience with at Metricon as the real succinct message?
So the presentation that I'm giving is using these air taxis as the case study, if you will. But what I'm wanting to get across, because this is a primarily engineering audience at Metricon, So I want them to understand that this is a multidisciplinary effort, that it's not just a roboticist, it's not just an electrical engineer or an aerospace engineer who's designing these things, that it really calls into play a community of experts in order to make this happen.
So Bell Helicopter and Uber and Hillwood Development, I don't know what part they play in it. I guess building the physical areas where this traffic's going to take off and land. I don't know how Hillwood got into it, but you're going to be trying to attract as many brains as you can in various different disciplines and areas to all come together. How in the devil are you going to do this?
Well, it's by understanding a couple of things. One is that we're not developing just an air vehicle. That air vehicle exists within an overall framework and infrastructure. And just like the questions that you've asked, it involves legislators, it involves probably some amount of psychologists and sociologists to understand how people respond and think about aircraft. And it's going to engage, of course, a number of engineering disciplines, both traditional disciplines as well as emerging disciplines, something like cybersecurity or big data or machine learning. All these have to come together in order to make this successful.
it sounds gargantuan. It just sounds gargantuan, and it sounds like something that almost is beyond the scope of pulling together. And I would guess that you're probably going to have to call on mines outside of the United States and in other countries and those sorts of things. Are there plans to have some sort of relationship with, say, the European Union or with Russia or with any or China or any of these other entities?
Well, certainly we want to leverage whatever applicable brain power we can bring to the problem. For example, the FAA, they have very good relationships with EASA, who is the European counterpart to the FAA, and I know that there are discussions going on in coordination between those two agencies. It is definitely something that is big in scope. You're exactly spot on with that. It's exciting, it's big, and it's a challenge.
Okay, Mike, before we get out of here, I know that you've been mentored in your career by some brilliant people, and I know that you're mentoring people right now, younger people coming along, and maybe family or friends or something like that. Words to live by, kind of a creed of operation. You know, what guides you? Where do you get your beacon?
Interesting question. Good question. You know, I guess I've always been a big fan of, let me back up. I used to be in Boy Scouts. And one of the things that I was taught when you go camping is leave your campsite in the same condition or better than when you found it. You know, I want to do the same thing with the people I interact with and the things that I personally am involved with. I want to make a difference. I want to make sure that there's a benefit.
Okay. All right, Mike McNair, plenary speaker for the October 26 Metricon Conference. It's coming up at the Arlington Convention Center. More on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you will see a link. Mike is with Bell Helicopter and the innovation lead for autonomy vehicles at Bell. That is vertical takeoff and landing vehicles being introduced in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and in Dubai in cooperation with Uber and their Elevate program. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. I can't tell you how enjoyable this was, and certainly we're going to look with awe as you bring us more information on October 26th.
I am looking forward to doing exactly that, and I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz.